The White House's unruly neighborhood, crime, scandal, and intrigue in the history of Lafayette Square. The chapter, the craziest inaugural party of them all. It was the wildest inauguration event in presidential history. It could have killed the president. It almost wrecked the president's house. It forced the new president to find a hotel for the night. Andy Jackson was elected in 1828 as the first true populist president. He was a man of the people and of his time. He was raised dirt poor. He'd been born on the border of North Carolina and South Carolina in a place so remote we don't know in which state he was born. He'd risen by ambition and grit to be a wealthy Tennessee plantation owner and a fabulously successful general. He prospered in politics during a Jacksonian era where the vote was extended from a small number of rich property holders to almost universal white male suffrage. A clear majority of the American people wanted him to be president. They saw him as one of them, and proof that most anyone in the new republic could become the head of the land. Jackson ran for and won the popular vote for president in 1824, but lost in the Electoral College. This only increased the fervor of his supporters for the next election. In 1828, Jackson handily beat incumbent president John Quincy Adams in the Electoral College, as well as in raw voter appeal. For his inauguration, on March 4, 1829, his supporters, many of modest means, many from the rustic western frontier, wanted to be there to touch his coat. Thousands traveled to the Capitol to watch him take the oath of office. After his inaugural address on the east portico of the Capitol building, a boisterous crowd surged forward, snapped a protective ship's cable, and jostled about the new president. Officials hustled the 61-year-old Jackson inside the sanctuary of the Capitol. On its west side, he climbed on a white horse for the 1.5-mile ride along Pennsylvania Avenue to the Executive Mansion. Masses of humanity, on horseback, carriage, and foot, accompanied him along the route. The celebration didn't stop there. That afternoon, the new administration held a White House gala. As befitting a populist president, the party was open to all. Crashing the party. Even before the president's arrival, a throng had gathered about Lafayette Square opposite the White House entrance. Some had been drinking throughout that warm March day. All were in a festive mood. They pushed against the fence surrounding the mansion. They knocked it to the ground. The jolly Jacksonians swarmed to the front door. There was then no Secret Service. There wouldn't be one until the Lincoln presidency, and then it would be used to go after counterfeiters, not to protect the president. There were no formal guards at all for the nation's top official. Later, when Old Hickory went about the capital city, he carried a sturdy hickory cane to protect himself. But he hadn't expected trouble that day. The door to the White House was opened, and some of the windows, too, and the people went pushing and climbing inside. Within, unwashed frontiersmen climbed atop satin-covered chairs and did a victory dance. Plain folk cupped dirty hands into barrels and bowls of liquor and orange punch and slopped the liquor down their throats. Drunken revelers broke costly porcelain bowls and smashed plates of china. Cheek and jowl with the plebes was the city's elite, finely dressed diplomats, judges, members of Congress, and merchants. On hand was a horrified Supreme Court justice, Joseph Story, a staunch member of the opposition party, opposed to Jackson's populist Democrats. The judge would recall seeing the most vulgar and gross in the nation, mixing with the highest and most polished. Story added, the reign of King Mob seemed triumphant. A senator was agog and aghast at the numbers and low culture of the guests. Spirits, black, yellow, and gray, poured in one uninterrupted stream of mud and filth, he recalled. Among the throngs, many fit subjects for the penitentiary. The town's erudite chronicler, Mrs. Margaret Bayard Smith, echoed his sentiment. The majesty of the people had disappeared, wrote Smith, and a rabble, a mob of boys, negroes, women, children, scrambling, fighting, romping. What a pity. Jackson's aides and servants were horrified too at the damage to the mansion, but far more to the risk posed to the president's frail health. With bullets lodged in his body from dueling and brawls, Jackson suffered from internal bleeding, inflamed lungs, and pellets of lead. The late winter day was unusually hot, and the air inside the packed mansion was oppressive. As the people pushed near him, wishing to shake his hand, Jackson, his back to a wall, started to feel faint. Smith reported the president was almost pressed to death and nearly suffocated and torn to pieces. A flight to safety. Friends and staffers, perhaps with help from enslaved servants, locked arms in a human chain to keep the sea of supporters at bay. Aides hustled the president to a side exit. According to one story, they took him to a second floor, where they fashioned a makeshift rope from bedsheets. They passed it through a window to the ground. The president grabbed a hold of the line and was lowered to the White House lawn. Once outside, Old Hickory clambered atop a horse. He fled back along Pennsylvania Avenue to the National Hotel. That 6th Street lodging was on today's site of the museum, the Museum of the News. There Jackson, a rail-thin man of little appetite, sampled bits of ox steak with his vice president, John C. Calhoun of South Carolina. The following year, he and Calhoun would have a bitter falling out. All in all, his inauguration day seemed ill-omened. Jackson retired early, far from the maddening crowd. After the president's departure from the White House, staff and servants remained in crisis mode. Their quick thinking may have stopped the president's own supporters from crushing him to death, but his hard-drinking backers still ran rampant over his residence. Aides feared the White House would be wrecked. Then someone, perhaps White House steward Antoine Michel Giusta, had a brainstorm. 4 years before, Giusta had saved President John Quincy Adams' life, rescuing him from drowning during a swim in the Potomac River. Now Giusta and his colleagues saved the White House. The president's men opened up the windows of the mansion to provide extra exits. They hoisted up the buckets of drink that had spurred the crowd into a drunken craze. They carried the pails of potables through the front entrance or handed them out through the windows. Then they conveyed the liquor over the trampled-down fence and into Lafayette Square. They also lugged over heaps of a then-rare treat, ice cream. After putting the potions and the sweets in the park, they saw their scheme had worked. The inebriated throng swarmed out of the president's house and out into the square. The tubs of refreshments served as the perfect lure. The mansion was saved from ruin. It was the people's day, Smith dryly summarized, and the people's president and the people would rule. From the White House's unruly neighborhood, crime, scandal, and intrigue in the history of Lafayette Square, by Edward P. Moser, McFarland Publishing, copyright 2019.